The previous few Mishnayos discussed different changes which the Beis Din made to the process of Kiddush HaChodesh after various groups amongst Klal Yisrael tried to cause problems and trying to alter the date of Rosh Chodesh. And the previous Mishnah taught that originally, once the Beis Din had declared when Rosh Chodesh was, so if Rosh Chodesh was on the 30th day of the previous month, so the previous month actually only had 29 days, so they would send the message to the entire Eretz Yisrael and beyond by lighting up torches, large poles of wood with fire on the top of mountains, starting from a mountain which was near the Beis Din. And once the fire was on there, so somebody on the next mountain along would see it and then light up a fire on there, and so on and so forth until it reached across the entire Eretz Yisrael and beyond. So then this Mishnah expands on that process. From where, from which mountains would they light up these torches? They would start Mihara Mishcha, which is Har HaZeisim, which is the mountain right next to the Beis HaMikdash. And since the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, sat by the Beis HaMikdash, this would be the nearest mountain, L'Sartava. The next mountain along was a mountain called Sartava. From there it would be down on the next mountain known as Gripina. The next mountain along was Chavron. The Gemara explains that the Mishnah does not list every mountain along the way, because that's simply too many. But it mentions the main mountains along the journey. And from the mountain called Chavron, the next mountain along, or a few mountains after that, would be Beis Biltin. And this was on the border of Eretz Yisrael, next to Bovel. Says the Mishnah, and from this mountain of Beis Biltin, they didn't move from there, from the top of the mountain over there. Rather, he would move the torch from side to side, and upwards and downwards, ad shehaya roya kol hagoyle lefonov, until he sees the entire exile in front of him, kemeduras ha'esh, like one big bonfire. Now, of course, he does not need to wait until the entire Bovel has torches lighting up. However, the city which borders Eretz Yisrael, the first city known as Pumpadisa, which was on the edge of Bovel, he had to wait until all of the people would go up onto the roofs of their houses and light torches over there. And once the entire city of Pumpadisa had done that, so the whole city would look as if it's on fire. And from there, he could then go down from the mountain, and he would rely on that to spread the message across the entire Bovel. Mishnah Hey, this Mishnah adds another change which was made in the Kiddush HaChodesh process. However, this change was not made because of people trying to cause damage, but for a different reason. Chatzah Gedolah Hayta B'Yerushalayim, there was a large courtyard in Yerushalayim, and of course this is referring to the times when the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, sat in Yerushalayim. Shortly before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, however, the Sanhedrin was moved to Yavneh. But the Mishnah is talking about the stages during which the large Beis Din called the Sanhedrin sat by the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So there was a very large courtyard, Uveis Yazik HaSanikres, and it was called Beis Yazik. This comes from a word to do with stones, because the courtyard was surrounded by a stone wall. Ulashom Kol Eidim Miskansim. And into that courtyard, all of the witnesses who came would enter. They would wait around there until being called by the Beis Din. Ubasin, Bidnus, I'm sure, and the Basin would check them over there. They would call witness by witness, or each pair at a time, and they would interrogate them. Usudos Gedolos Eisin Lohem, says the Mishnah. They would make very large feasts for the witnesses, Bishvilshi Hurigidun Lavai, in order that they would be regular to come, and they wouldn't be put off by perhaps a long wait, or by seeing there's so many other witnesses there. So they might think that they're not necessary, and next time, when they see the Rosh Chodesh moon, they might not come, even though next time they might be necessary. So to make sure that people would indeed come if they saw the Rosh Chodesh moon, they would make it very nice for them with all these feasts. And now the Mishnah tells us that Baruch Shoyna, originally, if the witnesses came on a Shabbos, then Lohayu Zazim Misham Kol Hayom, they were not permitted to move from that courtyard all day. Since they would have come from beyond the Tuchum, from beyond the maximum 2,000 amos distance which one is allowed to travel on Shabbos. So in order to get to the Beis Din, they were allowed to do that, as we learned in the previous perek. However, once they had testified, once they had arrived there, they were not allowed to return back home, because the halacha is that if somebody leaves their tuchum on Shabbos, they only have a maximum of 4 amos to travel. Now, if they're inside the courtyard, then they're allowed to travel within the entire courtyard, but not beyond. And so they had to stay there all day, which also explains why they made large feasts, because people would have been put off from coming back. However, says the Mishnah, his kingdom and Gamliel Azokain, Rabban Gamliel Azokain instituted, Shehu Mahalchin Alpaim Amlochol Ruach, that they would be able to travel another 2,000 amos in every direction from that courtyard. Since this 2,000 amos limit is only with Rabbonon, they were lenient over here in order to encourage people to come in the future. And so with Rabbonon, we view these people as if they lived in Yerushalayim from the beginning of Shabbos, as if they are regular residents of Yerushalayim. So they actually have 2,000 amos in every direction from the edge of the city of Yerushalayim, not from the edge of the courtyard. But just like everybody else who lives in Yerushalayim, we view these people just like them, and they are allowed to travel 2,000 amos in every direction from the edge of Yerushalayim. And continues the Mishnah, V'lo elu bulvad, and not only these people who come as witnesses for Kiddush HaChodesh, elo afach achoma, but also a midwife, Habo Liyaled, who comes to help a woman give birth on Shabbos, so she travels beyond the Tuchum, and of course she's allowed to do that. It's a matter of life and death, and so it overrides the prohibitions of Shabbos. The Habo Lahatzlamin Hadaleka, and one who comes to save people from a fire, Umin Agayis, or from an enemy army, Umin Anohar, or from a river which caused a flood, Umin Amapoles, or from a collapsed building. In all of these cases of pikuach nefesh, of life-threatening situations, it is permitted to violate Shabbos. But the Mishnah says, based on Rabban Gamliel Hazokain's decree, even once they have finished saving the lives, they are considered to be Har Elu Kanshi Ha'ir, they are considered to be like the people living in that city where they travel to, and therefore, V'yesh Lam Apayim Amal Chol Ruach, they are permitted to travel 2,000 amos in every direction from the edge of that new city. Mishnah Vav. The Mishnah now begins its discussion of the actual interrogation of the witnesses who come to testify about the Rosh Chodesh moon, and how the Beis Din would tell if they were just lying, or perhaps they had made a mistake and they thought it was the new Rosh Chodesh moon, but they were mistaken. Ketzad Bodkin Sa'edim, how would the Beis Din check and interrogate the witnesses? Zug Sheborishain, the pair of witnesses which arrived first, Bodkin Sa'edim, they would interrogate that pair first. Machnisin Sa'godol Shawahen, they bring in the older one in order to respect the older one more than the younger witness. And they say to him, Emor, say, tell us the answers to the following questions. Now, the Mishnah does not list all of the questions which were asked to him. There are many regular questions which are asked to every witness, such as, when did you see it? Where did you see it? The Mishnah only lists the ones which are unique to Kiddush HaChodesh, even though the other questions were also asked to him. And the first of the unique questions was, Ketzad Ra'isa Salavana, how did you see the moon? Lifnei Achama El Achar Achama? Was it facing the sun or facing away from the sun? The Rosh Chodesh moon, of course, is curved in the shape of a crescent, and the answer to this question should always be the same, that it was facing away from the sun, which means that the lit-up part, the lit-up half, was towards the sun, whereas the points were away from the sun, because the part which is next to the sun, that's the part which is lit up. Alright, the next question would be, Litzfona Olidroma, was it to the north of the sun or to the south of the sun? And the answer to this question depends on the time of the year. Kamahir Gavoya, how tall was it? How high up in the sky was it? Ulanahir Noita, and to which direction was it leaning? Of course, he would have already said that it's facing away from the sun. But the question is, how slanted is it? V'chamahir Rochav, and how wide was the lit-up part of the moon? Now, the Mishnah says, Im Omar, if he said in answer to the first question, Lifnei Achamah, that it was facing the sun, which means that the lit-up part was away from the sun, and the points were facing towards the sun, Le'omar Klum, he has said nothing, meaning that we know his testimony is false, because that's impossible for it to be facing towards the sun, because the whole light of the moon only comes from the sun, so it must be facing away with the light on the side of the sun. So once they'd asked all of these questions to the first witness, V'achar kach, and after that, V'machnisin sasheni, they would bring in the second witness, V'odkinesai, and they would interrogate him with exactly the same questions. Im nimtzu devarim chuvanim, if their words are found to be in line with each other and they agree, neither witness contradicts the other one. And of course, they don't have to give exactly the same answers, as long as they are roughly very similar, since it's very difficult to give exact answers to these questions. As long as they are roughly similar, dusan kayemes, the testimony is valid, and we believe them. And the next mission will describe what is done once the testimony has been accepted. Now, if you think about it, generally there would be many more witnesses as well. So if after accepting the testimony of the first pair, they wouldn't interrogate the rest of the witnesses and they would just send them home, then those witnesses might end up being very upset, and they won't end up coming back in the future. They'll think that they are totally not necessary. And so the Mishnah says, "V'sh'arkol azuga is the rest of the pairs, shalim reisan rosh dvarim." The Beis Din do ask them the main things. They don't spend a long time, they don't ask every question, but they do ask them a few general questions. Lo sho tzrichen lahem, not because they needed those witnesses, ela kadei shalayitzu b'fachin nefesh, rather so that they do not leave in an upset spirit. B'shvil shivrigin lavai, so that they would be regular and willing to come to the Beis Din in the future when they see the Rosh Chodesh moon. Now, even once the witnesses' testimony has been accepted, in order for that day to become Rosh Chodesh, it still requires another step, and that is that the Beis Din declare it to be Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Beis Din, the head of the Beis Din, known as the Nossi, Omer should declare, he should say, Mekudosh, the day is sanctified, it's holy, it is Rosh Chodesh today. He says the word Mekudosh, that's learnt from Psukim, where Moshe Rabbeinu declared the Yom Tovim. So too, the head of the Beis Din, which Moshe Rabbeinu was, must also declare the day to be Rosh Chodesh, V'chola Om Eilin Achrov, and all of the people answer after him, Mekudosh, Mekudosh. It is sanctified, it is sanctified. This is learned from the Pasuk, which says, Mardei Hashem Asher Tikru'u Eisom, the dates and the Yom Tovim of Hashem, which you shall call and declare. And the word Eisom, them, in the Pasuk is missing a Vov. And so it could also be read as Atem, Asher Tikru'u Atem, which would mean that you, in the plural, call them, and you declare the Yom Tovim. So we learn from there that all of the people present are also involved in the declaration of Rosh Chodesh. So all of the other members of the Beis Din would also declare Mekudosh Mekudosh. And the reason why they say it twice, again, is because the Pasuk over there calls it Mikra'i Kodesh, holy declared days in the plural. Mikra'i, the word for declarations, is in the plural, and we learn from there that they should say Mekudosh Mekudosh twice. Now, the second half of the Mishnah has a machlokes as to whether every single month needs to be declared by the Beis Din, or only if they are making Rosh Chodesh earlier. Bein Sheniro Abzmanai, whether the moon is seen in its correct time, and in this case that refers to the 30th night, meaning that the previous month only had 29 days, Bein Shelo Abzmanai, or whether it was not seen in that time, rather, it was only seen on the 31st day of the month, as it were. So the previous month had 30 days in. Mekadshenosai, in either case, regardless of which day Rosh Chodesh is, the Beis Din need to declare it to be Rosh Chodesh. As we explain from these pesukim, we learn that the Beis Din are required in order to make it Rosh Chodesh. However, Rabbi Lozbar Tzadik says, if it was not seen in its time on the first day that Rosh Chodesh could be, so there's only one other day that it could be, the next day. So once you've reached the second day that Rosh Chodesh could be, and the Beis Din did not declare it to be the first day, so even without their declaration, there's no question about it that the second day would be considered to be Rosh Chodesh. It's always going to be one of those 2 days. So as soon as they have not declared it to be the first day, so clearly that month had 30 days in, and Rosh Chodesh would be the next day. And Emekachnoi say they do not declare it to be Rosh Chodesh, Shekvarikid Shur Shomayim, because as it were, the heavens and Hashem already sanctified that day, because it is clear to all that day is Rosh Chodesh, and the Beis Din do not need to declare it to be so. There are those who explain that according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzadok, the entire purpose of declaring Rosh Chodesh was not because that was absolutely necessary in terms of making that day Rosh Chodesh. As soon as the witness's testimony was accepted, the day was Rosh Chodesh already. Rather, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzadok, the whole purpose is only to publicize the fact that it's Rosh Chodesh. And that's why he says that if it wasn't publicized on the first day, then clearly it's the second day, and there is no need to publicize that fact.